The headlines, Russia's lower house of parliament approves friendship treaties with two breakaway regions in eastern Ukraine. Ukraine's president threatens to cut diplomatic relations with Russia and calls for sanctions on Moscow after the Kremlin recognized two Ukrainian regions as independent republics. Iran's president calls for cooperation among the gas-exporting countries in the face of U.S. sanctions on some oil gas exporters. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. We're starting off with the tensions over Ukraine, and Russian lawmakers have approved friendship treaties with two self-proclaimed People's Republics of Donetsk and Luhansk in eastern Ukraine. The treaties have signed by President Vladimir Putin to come into force. The agreements pave the way for Moscow to build military bases in breakaway regions, also adopt a defense posture and tighten economic integration. The decision came after President Putin recognized independence of the two regions, accusing the Western-backed government of Kiev committing a genocide there. The Russian Foreign Ministry has called on other countries to follow suit, saying the move was the only possible step. The developments have prompted the West to accuse Moscow of violating the Minsk agreements. Ukraine threatens to break off diplomatic ties with Russia, recalling its senior diplomat from Moscow for consultations. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky accuses Russia of preparing for further military aggression. However, he plays down the prospect of a large-scale conflict. Zelensky has called on Kiev's allies to quickly impose sanctions on Russia. He urged an immediate halt to the construction of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline designed to convey Russian natural gas to Germany. Moscow's decision to recognize the breakaway regions in eastern Ukraine has sparked reactions from Western countries. They have promised to impose sanctions on Russia. The sixth summit of the Gas Exporting Countries Forum is underway in the Qatari capital, Doha. In an address to the session, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has slammed U.S. sanctions on the oil and gas industry of some member states.
The sanctions imposed by the U.S. against the oil and gas industry and also members of the gas producing countries, using this tool of sanctions for imposing one's wishes, for imposing one's domineering wishes, will fail in the face of independent countries. This will jeopardize the interests of...
Raisi called for further cooperation among the member states to circumvent those measures. He said collaboration among the member states can bring about better economic conditions for all GECF members. The Iranian president noted that the Islamic Republic has a collective strategy for good cooperation. He said that Tehran seeks to increase its export power. Raisi also described natural gas as a clean source of energy, saying utilizing such energy can bring about major advantages. Now, for more on that, we're joined by Rodney Shakespeare, professor of economics and political commentator. Sir, if you could please tell us what the prospects of these gas exporting countries are, considering the fact that, as the Iranian president mentioned, gas is considered a very clean source of energy.
You have a most extraordinary situation. You see, 5 years ago, Saudi Arabia blockaded Qatar, and somebody came to the rescue of Qatar. It was Iran. So there's the first point. Good relations between Iran and Qatar. But the second point is, in the middle of the Persian Gulf, there is this great big gas field. And as I speak, Europe has shot itself in the foot. That's to say, damaged its own interests. Because the Germans have just announced that they are not going to allow the Nord Stream 2 gas pipe. And Germany is a country that got rid of its atomic power. And that's one of the reasons why gas prices in Europe and indeed in the world are going right the way up. And on top of that, you have the situation in Ukraine. And goodness me, what's going to happen there? But the West may say, oh, we're going to put sanctions on Russia, forgetting that the sanctions would probably do more damage to Europe and even to America than it will be the other way round. So the situation on between Iran and Qatar is of good relations, good cooperation, a strategy for exporting gas to the world in a situation where that gas is badly needed and at this very moment is even more badly needed, where the West's strategies for situations are showing basically that the West is losing power, losing influence, and the tectonic plates are shifting away from America and the West. And this situation in the Persian Gulf of that gas field and its importance for the, so we say, just for the gas supply of Europe, this seems to sort of sum up the situation as it is.
Thank you very much. That was Rodney Shakespeare, professor of economics and a political commentator, who joined us live from London. Moving on, China issues a warning to the United States over its plan to include Taiwan into its Indo-Pacific strategy. China's foreign minister says Washington's move is sending all the wrong signals. Wang Yi has told his American counterpart that Beijing is still willing to manage its differences with Washington and stabilize bilateral ties. Earlier this month, the U.S. said that it would work with allies in the region to maintain peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait. China strongly opposes Washington's increasing military and political support for Taiwan, as it considers the island an inseparable part of its territory. On Monday, Beijing imposed sanctions on two American firms over a pending $100 million arms sale to Taiwan. Hezbollah says that it has successfully flown a drone on a reconnaissance mission over Israeli-occupied territories. The Lebanese resistance movement says the UAV returned untouched despite Israel's repeated attempts to down it. The operation once again lays bare the inefficiency of the regime's much-publicized Iron Dome system.
Around a month ago, Israeli media reported that the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, has increased its drone activities in Israeli airspace. The drone operations were mainly for gathering intel. Last Friday, the Israeli military activated the Iron Dome and scrambled fighter jets, but failed to intercept a drone from Lebanon. As a result, air raid sirens were sounded in the north, and later it was announced that Israeli fighter jets were spotted flying low over Beirut. Hezbollah later released a statement saying the drone named Hassan entered Israeli airspace on a reconnaissance mission at a depth of 70 kilometers for around 40 minutes before returning untouched. This was the second incident in as many days and comes after Hezbollah's Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah said the group was making its own drones in Lebanon. Pointing to Israeli threats, the Hezbollah chief said the enemies only threaten others with war, but they know it will be very difficult and costly for them. He said Hezbollah is capable of upgrading the quality of its rockets to fend off Israeli threats. In fact, Hezbollah has been increasing its fleet of unmanned aerial vehicles, and now it is estimated to have some 2,000 UAVs. Based on Israeli media reports, Hezbollah is also in possession of over 100,000 rockets, and Israel's existing missile systems neither are capable of intercepting such a number of missiles and rockets, nor can protect Israeli settlers. The launch of the radio-controlled aircraft on Friday seems like a message from Hezbollah. Even if the Israeli military sometimes manages to shoot down Hezbollah's UAVs or drones, the resistance movement can keep sending them into Israel at will. If Israel believes it is free to violate Lebanese sovereignty with UAVs and fighter jets, Hezbollah will do the same south of the border.
It is interesting to see how fragile its entire military industrial complex actually is. And the latest event has just showed it once again that even though the Israeli regime is investing so many efforts in its so-called defense, it remains very weak, and it is the Lebanese resistance that continues to show the Israeli regime its own weakness.
For years, Israel has carried out repeated incursions into Lebanese airspace in a clear violation of UN Security Council resolutions. But things have started to change now, with Hezbollah resistance movement developing military capabilities to retaliate those violations. As of late, Israeli incursions have decreased dramatically, and observers believe Israel must be more cautious about its actions in the future.
Previously, retired Israeli General Yitzhak Brek warned that the Israeli military is not ready for any future war, especially a multi-front one. He predicted that in an extreme scenario, the resistance movements in Syria, Yemen, and Iraq, as well as Hamas in the Gaza Strip, will launch missiles and drones at Israel, so that the average number of rockets fired at the regime will reach 3,000 a day. Atuit reports during the Israel-Palestine conflict in May, when Israel's official military data indicated that the Iron Dome only destroyed fewer than half of the rockets and mortars fired by Hamas and Islamic Jihad resistance movements toward Israel. Therefore, in case of an all-out war, the Israeli regime would be vulnerable. While Tel Aviv sees its power waning, the resistance front has managed to increase its prowess. This is while Israel is trying to sell the Iron Dome missile system to Arab nations, but how can the Iron Dome work for them when it did not work for Israel?
This is why the entire existence of the so-called State of Israel in its current form necessitates the ongoing killing of people and ongoing expansion of its military complex. But at the same time, of course, it remains fragile. This is a very existential contradiction within the Israeli colony that eventually will also probably lead to its to the fall of the apartheid regime and the Israeli hegemony, supposed hegemony in the region.
The editor-in-chief of Rayal Yom newspaper, Abdel Bari Atwan, says a small drone that is worth only $100 manages to penetrate into Israel's airspace, despite the Tel Aviv regime's costly military equipment and the Iron Dome system. He says Persian Gulf Arab states that are racing to buy this system from Israel should give it a second thought after the regime's failure against the Hezbollah resistance movement's drones.
Now, a probe conducted in Israel confirms that the regime has used its Pegasus malware to infect the mobile phone of an Israeli citizen subject to court order. The probe, however, says the Pegasus system was not employed by police to infect mobile phones of citizens, as earlier claimed by an Israeli newspaper. But the Financial Daily says that the preliminary investigation requires a new check of these findings. Previously, the Daily said that the police have hacked the phones of dozens of Israelis, including the son of a former Israeli prime minister. Pegasus is a malware product made by Israeli firm NSO. It enables users to remotely activate the phone's microphone and camera and suck up the data inside. And Palestinians in Gaza have expressed their solidarity with thousands of Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails. Daily and weekly events are being held in the coastal enclave to boost the morale of those prisoners. Ashraf Shannon reports.
People in the blockaded Gaza Strip staged a sit-in to support Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails and detention centers. During the sit-in, people shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and demanded the release of all Palestinian prisoners. Palestinian prisoners are political prisoners, and they are regarded as heroes and freedom fighters by all Palestinians.
The suffering of Palestinian prisoners has increased in recent months, especially following the Baldeep operation in September. Prisoners, including women and children, suffer every day inside Zionist jails. The Zionist crimes against the prisoners must stop.
The sit-in comes at a time when hundreds of Palestinian detainees have been denied proper medical treatment in Israeli jails. Over 200 Palestinian detainees have died in Israeli prisons since 1967. During a press conference at Red Cross office, the Palestinian Ministry of Health condemned Israel's inhumane treatment of Palestinian prisoners, especially those suffering from chronic conditions.
For Palestinian inmates, Israeli prisons serve as gateways towards their death because of medical negligence. Currently, there are 700 very sick Palestinian prisoners in Israeli prisons without proper medical care. Those sick prisoners are dying slowly as the world watches in silence.
Palestinian prisoners are held in 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers where they are denied basic human rights. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas demanded international protection for Palestinian prisoners.
We call on the Red Cross and all international organizations to help Palestinian prisoners, especially those who are sick in Zionist jails. We demand international protection for Palestinian prisoners. They are suffering because of the racist Zionist practices.
People here are calling on the international community to come out silence and Palestinian prisoners.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, there are thousands of Palestinian prisoners suffering under inhuman detention conditions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 3, 2016 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of 27th anniversary of Imam Khomeini's passing. The speech was delivered at Imam Khomeini's shrine in Tehran, Iran.
There are specific criteria for being a revolutionary. I'd like to mention five criteria during this meeting. The first criterion is a commitment to the main principles and values of the revolution. The second criterion is aiming at the ideals of the revolution and making great efforts to attain them. We should identify the ideals and lofty goals of the revolution, and then we should make efforts to attain them. The third criterion is the commitment to the independence of the country in all areas, including political, economic, cultural, which is the most important one, and independence of security. The fourth criterion regards showing sensitivity in the face of the enemy and the enemy's plots and plans, refusing to follow him.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The enemy should be identified. His plans should be understood, and following him should be avoided. As I said recently, the Holy Quran has referred to this refusal to follow the enemy as a great jihad. I have spoken 2-3 times about this matter. The fifth criterion is religious and political piety, which is very important. If these 5 criteria exist within someone, then they are definitely a revolutionary. Of course, as I said before, there are different degrees of revolutionary behavior. I will provide a short explanation for each of these 5 criteria. As I said, the first criterion is a commitment to the basic and fundamental values of Islam. Last year, in the same meeting, I spoke about Imam's principles. These are our fundamental principles. The first principle is the commitment to original Islam, which is opposed to American Islam. Original Islam is against American Islam. American Islam has 2 branches. One is reactionary Islam, and another is secular Islam. Arrogance and materialistic powers have supported and continue to support both of these branches. Sometimes they create them, sometimes they guide them, and sometimes they help them.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Fires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
World leaders participated in the 58th Munich Security Conference in Germany, which is held annually. This year's conference was dominated by the Ukraine crisis, as major Western powers accused the Kremlin of zeroing in on an imminent invasion of Ukraine. In the conference, the U.S. Vice President, Kamala Harris, announced that Washington and its allies will impose significant and unprecedented economic costs on Russia if it further invades Ukraine.
We will impose far-reaching financial sanctions and export controls. We will target Russia's financial institutions and key industries.
Harris also added the U.S. will not stop with economic measures, but will further reinforce the eastern flank of NATO. Harris said some 6,000 additional service members are already deployed to Romania, Poland, and Germany. The official also noted that some 8,500 troops in the United States are on high alert. Also, another high-profile attendee in the 2022 Munich Security Conference, the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, said Britain could block Russian companies from raising capital in London and has passed legislation to widen sanctions on Russian businesses and individuals if the country invades Ukraine. Johnson also stated that Russia would pay a heavy military price if it invaded Ukraine. Britain has already sent hundreds of troops to Poland to support NATO's eastern flank. However, the chairman of the Munich Security Conference, Wolfgang Eisinger, has highlighted the need for dialogue to resolve the differences. He said our world is in danger, traditional certainties are crumbling, threats and vulnerabilities are multiplying, and the rules-based order is increasingly under attack. He noted that the need for dialogue has never been greater. Meanwhile, Russia has time and again denied any intention to invade its western neighbor. It argues that it's deployed the military near Ukraine's borders to protect itself amid NATO's eastward expansion. Also, in a major step toward de-escalation, last week Moscow withdrew some of its troops near the Ukrainian border after completing military exercises. The U.S. President Joe Biden has ramped up his rhetoric against Russia amid mounting tension in Eastern Europe. He once again repeated his claim that Washington had intelligence showing his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, has made up his mind to invade Ukraine.
We have reason to believe the Russian forces are planning to and intend to attack Ukraine in the coming week, in the coming days. We believe that they will target Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, a city of 2.8 million innocent people.
Speaking at the White House, Biden warned that war will close the window for diplomacy with Moscow. Biden also said Western countries won't deploy troops in Ukraine, but will continue to bolster their defensive capabilities. Earlier, the White House said Washington and its allies are working on a sanctions package in case of a Russian invasion. This is while Italy says the ban should not target energy imports from Russia. This could throw the EU economy into mayhem or even negatively affect Russia's gas supplies to Europe. The EU is Russia's biggest trade partner. Nearly 38% of Russia's exports went to the EU, while over 36% of Russia's imports came from Europe. Russia is also the origin of 26% of EU's oil imports and 40% of EU's gas imports.
I don't think Russia cares so much and worries so much about Western sanctions. Because Russia proved for the years, in spite of Western pressure and different sanctions, capable to sustain and even improving slowly, not so good as before, its economy. So sanctions are not the main threat to Russia.
The U.S. accuses Russia of planning an attack on Ukraine, but Moscow says that is not true. Therefore, the latest warnings, based on unfounded accusations that a Russian invasion of Ukraine is just around the corner, would further complicate the situation at this critical time.
The Australian government announces a plan to blacklist the whole of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. The country had previously designated Hamas's military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, back in 2003. Under the new restrictions, which will go into force in April, financing or providing any support to Hamas will be criminalized, with some offenses carrying a 25-year prison sentence. The reason for the blacklisting is what Canberra calls the group's, quote, hateful ideologies. But let's dive deeper and learn more about the Gaza-based group. Ever since Hamas scored a landslide victory in Gaza's parliamentary elections in 2006, it has been running the besieged enclave. Protecting the Strip has been one of the group's core responsibilities. Over the years, it has carried out the responsibility, the most recent instance of which came in May 2021, during the Israeli military's 11-day war on the Gaza Strip. The war killed some 250 Palestinians, including 66 children, but only 12 Israelis. If it weren't for the deterrent capabilities of the group, the number of Palestinian casualties would have been a lot higher. How would this justify branding the group as a terrorist organization? The case in point is that any group whose ideology goes against that of the U.S. and its allies is hit with such allegations. Hamas spokesman Hazem Qassem condemns Australia's decision to list the movement as a terrorist organization and calls on the Australian government to present an apology to the Palestinian people. He said the planned move attests to the biased support for the occupying regime and emboldens Israel to press ahead with its aggression against Palestinian people. The Islamic Jihad and the Popular Resistance Committees were also among Palestinian groups denouncing the decision. Voices of condemnation also came from inside Australia. The Australia Palestine Advocacy Network, a national coalition of Australians who support Palestinian rights, disagreed with the designation, saying that it does nothing to advance the cause of peace and will only create more suffering for the 2 million people currently living under the 15-year Israeli blockade.
The word terrorist has been essentially coined and put into circulation by Zionists to demonize the people who are resisting their genocide in Palestine and the people all over the world who support that resistance. And in fact, the actual meaning of the word terrorism is deliberately targeting civilians to create fear or terror. And that is a military tactic that has been used since time immemorial by all sorts of different forces.
All in all, in the absence of any meaningful support for the people of Palestine and the condemnation of Tel Aviv, Israel continues to commit gross violations and gets away with murder.
The MKO terrorist group appears to be expanding its operations to include trafficking, among other criminal activities. An Albanian historian and journalist says the country's police have alerted the U.S. embassy that members of the terrorist organization are involved in various criminal activities in Europe, including human trafficking, with possible links to the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group. Alsi Jazeshi, citing Albanian media reports, says the MKO operatives, headed by the terrorist ringleader Marjan Rajavi and based in a camp near the capital Tirana, have attempted to traffic over 400 of the group's own members to France. Jazeshi added that a number of the terrorist cult's members have been detained for trafficking people from the Middle East to Europe, who were most likely Daesh terrorists. The journalist also says some senior MKO members, including the ringleader's sister-in-law, have been arrested while trying to traffic drugs into Italy, with police having prosecuted another member over theft charges. The Albanian police deny sending any letter to the American embassy without elaborating further. The journalist says the terror group has forced an Albanian media outlet to take down an article it published about the arrests.
They used Albania as a safe haven to carry out illegal activities and criminal acts. And now they are becoming a problem for Greece, Italy, Germany, and France. And when I say problem, not just trafficking human beings, drugs, money laundering, and some other activities. They have become a problem for Albania, for the crimes I just mentioned, but also burglary, pickpocketing, harassing women, sexual harassment, and at least one case of rape.
Critics in Albania blame the United States and its Western allies for providing protection for the terrorist cult. Mujahideen Khalq Organization, MKO, also known as the MEK, is a notorious anti-Iran terror group that embraces an ideology that mixes Marxism and terrorism. MKO's crimes against Iran run the gamut from collaborating with Iraq's former dictator Saddam Hussein during the 1980-1988 war on Iran to a violent campaign of bombings across the country. One of the group's highest-profile acts of terror came on June 28, 1981, when a powerful bomb went off at the headquarters of an Iranian political party, the Islamic Republican Party, where the party's leaders were holding a meeting. The bombing killed scores of Iranian officials, including the then head of Supreme Judicial Council, Ayatollah Mohammad Beheshti. Most recently, Iran said there were traces of MKO involvement in the assassination of Iran's top scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh in November 2020. The anti-Iran organization has long been recognized as a terror group by much of the international community. However, in June 2008, the United Kingdom crossed the group off its terror list. The move was followed by the European Union in 2009 and the United States in 2012. Canada followed in the footsteps of the Western countries in delisting MKO as a terror group in December 2012 without offering any reason for the decision.
Some of them have their hands stained with blood. Some of them have battlefield experience. Some of them have some formal training by Mukhabarat, the special secret police of Saddam Hussein. So they are not just poor people trying to go to Europe to make a living. They are a danger. Criminals need to go to prison, not to roam in the streets of European cities. Absolutely. This is my idea.
Since removing their decade-long ban on the MKO, the Western nations, especially the United States, have used the group as a tool to pressure Iran. But the latest revelations about the terror organization can serve as a wake-up call for its Western supporters that the threats they have been brewing against Iran will backfire on them.
The government of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is in trouble. His cabinet has invoked a rarely used emergency ordinance to quell anti-vaccine truck protests that have crippled the country. The Emergency Act can authorize the use of the military. It can also temporarily suspend citizens' rights to free movement or assembly, and the government is taking steps to stop financial support of illegal protests. The measure allows Canadian banks to freeze accounts suspected of funding the blockades and suspend insurance on vehicles in the protests. Trudeau has noted that the measures will be time-limited, geographically targeted, as well as reasonable and proportionate. The Canadian law, which was passed in 1988, says, "For the purpose of this act, a national emergency is an urgent and critical situation of a temporary nature that cannot be effectively dealt with under any other law of Canada." Trudeau said, "The government is not overriding the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, nor limiting the right to peaceful assembly."
The federal government has invoked the Emergencies Act to supplement provincial and territorial capacity to address the blockades and occupations.
The plan has drawn widespread condemnation from Canadians, including the Premier in Quebec, Francis Legault, who said Trudeau's announcement risked putting oil on the fire. The trouble all began after thousands of protesters in trucks and other vehicles blocked the streets of Ottawa, as well as two border crossings with the U.S. to vent their frustration over COVID-19 vaccine mandates. The protests have not stayed in Canada, though. Similar freedom convoy protests have grown in countries like the U.S., France, New Zealand, Australia. As Commonwealth protests, many have also vented their anger against the government due to their economic situation as a result of COVID-19.
Spontaneous thing where people are upset. That's one whole part of this, and it's part of a general movement, I think, that we're seeing around the world of the ultra-right asserting itself and using the money of the millionaires to do it.
The so-called Freedom Convoy protest started with truckers protesting COVID-19 vaccine or quarantine mandate. It then broadened to include people opposing all coronavirus-related restrictions announced by the Trudeau government. The protest has attracted the support of thousands of Canadians, even some who are fully vaccinated. They say all COVID-19 preventive measures must be dropped. The protests have drawn support from groups from the U.S.
Having is a right-wing attack on all kinds of things, because one of the demands of the people in Canada was that Trudeau should resign, and the other was that the western part of the country should secede. So, you know, these are not just little political things. So you have, in Canada in particularly, the implementation of a very conservative right-wing agenda. And everybody agrees on that, especially the right-wing who's doing it. So this isn't just some kind of, you know, spontaneous thing where people are upset.
Canadian authorities have said about half of the funding for the protests has come from U.S. supporters. Toronto Dominion Bank last week froze two personal bank accounts that received $1.4 million for the protests. In the western Canadian province of Alberta, police have broke up a group that was armed and prepared to use violence. The protests that have hindered traffic at border crossings have impacted more than $500 million in commerce each day.
I think that what happened was that the automobile companies complained. You know, there's production shut down, millions of dollars lost, and it was pretty clear that that was very unpopular. And he waited long enough for the economy to be heard and people to be heard and said, enough's enough. And I think the balance of force has changed a bit because of that.
Truckers and their supporters have gathered in the capital, Ottawa, since January 29th to rally against mask mandates, lockdowns, restrictions on gatherings, and other COVID-19 preventive measures. Some downtown Ottawa businesses have had to shut down temporarily. There have been reports of rock throwing, property damage, harassment, and even hate crimes.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه الا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: اذكروا انقطاع اللذات وبقاء التبعات.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Imam Ali alayhi salam stated, "Remember that pleasures will pass away, while the consequences will stay."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. In this very interesting and sometimes strange world that we live in, we have a tendency to value a human being based upon the completely wrong thing. So, for example, we think that somebody's value comes from the amount of money they have saved in their bank account. Or we sometimes, unfortunately, believe that a human being's value comes from the amount of wealth that they earn, the income level that they are at. Or sometimes we unfortunately think that an individual and a human being's worth is based upon the clothes that they wear, or the things that they own, or how big their house is, or how expensive their car is. Right? Or sometimes we tend to unfortunately think that the value of a human being is based upon their social status or their political power or their social circle. Allahu Akbar. All things that we unfortunately believe give worth and value to a human being. But we turn to the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says that a human being's worth is to the extent of their comprehension, their knowledge, and their praiseworthy deeds. Allahu Akbar. All of the things that we listed in the beginning of this segment, those are not things which give worth and value to a human being. Rather, as Imam Ali's universal persona says, a human being's worth comes from the amount of comprehension they have, the amount of ma'rifah, knowledge, understanding that they have. In addition to that, the comprehension and the ma'rifah is the knowledge and the ilm that they have. And not just the ilm and the knowledge on, tangent things. Knowledge of Allah, knowledge of the religion, knowledge of the infallible imams, knowledge of the truth and the reality that is present. And finally, just comprehension and ma'rifah and just knowledge and ilm is not enough. There is one more thing that Imam Ali alayhi salam says brings worth and value to a human being, and that is their praiseworthy deeds. Knowledge must be accompanied with action. We might have all the knowledge in the world, and we might have all the understanding and comprehension in the world, but when it comes to our actions, we falter, we take missteps, or God forbid we go in the opposite direction, then this is not valuable. What is valuable in the divine realm and in this realm is comprehension, knowledge, and praiseworthy deeds. This is what brings a human being value. A profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
وأسألك الأمان يوم يعض يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
We are on two sides. Either you love Ali ibn Abi Talib or you hate Ali ibn Abi Talib. That's if you know Ali ibn Abi Talib. And that is why we find a hadith from our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. أَنَّهُ قَالْ لِعَلِيٍ يَا عَلِي لَا يُحِبُّكَ إِلَّا مُؤْمِنٍ وَلَا يُبْغِذُكَ إِلَّا مُنَافِقٍ. He says, Oh Ali, no. That those who love you, that is a sign of iman. Yeah? And for those who hate you, that is a sign of nifaq, hypocrisy in their hearts. Now, we need to look, before we describe what is it about Imam Ali alayhi salam that makes him loved and hated at the same time so much, we need to have an introduction to understand this whole idea or this concept of this jazibiyah, as it is known in Arabic, this attraction. You know, when you meet a believer, for example, it is something which attracts one another to the believers. And this is an automatic attraction and repulsion. Another story that I remembered today while I was thinking of this is when I was in university. And we were taking a course for criminal justice. It's a huge auditorium, a few hundred people. One person looked like an Arab guy. We started talking to one another. And in the first day we were talking, and he said to me, What's your name? So I said, Ja'far. Now, my brother's Ja'far is a Shia name, yes? And I asked him, What is... And he smiled. He gave a little smirk, yeah? So I said, Okay, this is either good or this is bad, yeah? So he said, What is your name? He said, Abbas. You know the first thing we did? We hugged. That was the first thing. Why? Because we had iman in common. Yeah? We knew that we had something in common that was stronger than anything else. Now if he was another name, maybe we still would have hugged. Allahu A'lam. But I know that this attraction that I felt for him was for his iman. And that is why we became close friends. So this agrees, or this attraction is there within us, where people who have similarities will find attraction to one another.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Classified.